we'd had a tape recorder yesterday on our 2-hour trip, he would have pretty much had everything in the morning.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
Yeah.
I know. Well, I don't know. Kind of like that pool of Bethesda, when the waters moved, that's when you had to get in. Sometimes they ain't moving no more the next day, and it's hard to remember and put it all back together. But I don't know. Well, I want to talk about something, and I don't know if it'll be like a series thing like we try to do through each month or whatever. Sometimes that seems to work out, and sometimes it just doesn't, especially on the first Sunday. But we'll just see. We'll just see where it goes. And this is a really profound subject for me anyways. Very simple, very elementary, and the foundational things that really ought to be put into us when we're little. But it never is, for some reason. I guess because it wasn't put into the ones before us and then the ones before them. But it's one of them things that affects everything that you do in your life. Like, I mean, from the most mundane physical things you have to do every day to the deep spiritual things that affect your eternity. And it's this thing about the process of things and how God set it all up to be that way. I don't know. I'm not much of a classical music connoisseur or enthusiast, let's put it that way. But some of us are, some of you are. But here a while back I was listening to a podcast that was talking about the story of this specific piece. And it was Beethoven's string quartet in B flat major, opus 130. Okay. Ain't that a nice title to a song?
That's catchy.
It's 39 minutes long. Has like 7 movements or something like that. It's quite fascinating. But the thing is, the fascinating part about it is that Beethoven, from the time he was in his late 30s, early 40s, I think, from then on he was deaf. And he was a musical prodigy, even from a young age. Music was a language that he could read and hear and speak, really. But this specific piece was written when he was completely deaf. And when it was all said and done, and they gathered all of his contemporaries together, and they played this piece, that when it was done, all of the other composers of his time said, "What's there left to write? There's nothing left." He wrote it all. And the fascinating thing to me about it is that he never got to hear it played. He never heard this piece played, ever. And there's no telling how long it took him to write it. Because 39 minutes of four-part harmony with different instruments, a violin, 2 violins, a viola, and a cello. And he put all that together. And it's so complex, the time, how many thousands of times he had to have heard that in his mind and played this song in his mind, and how many years it must have took him to write it. And I think about that, and to me it's just like, why would he bother? He's never going to hear it. He can't work it out on a piano or nothing. He can't hear. He's deaf. Why would he do it? For the praise? No. He can't even hear them praise him. Why would he do it? Well, because the joy that he got from music after he was deaf was the process of putting it all together. It wasn't the end result that he could hear and enjoy, or the praise and the glory he'd receive from writing this beautiful piece of music. It was just the process of putting it all together. That's where he got his fulfillment from. You know? And life's just like that in every way. You know, the Lord, there are certain things. There's been specific times in the history of mankind where he worked a miracle and something happened immediately because the situation required it. And he deemed it worthy of immediate action and resolution. But for the most part, even in nature, everything is designed to take time.
Yes.
It just takes time. And I think by nature, creatures, one and all, are impatient completely. Like, they want it now. I don't want to wait. I want it now. It don't take a little baby, but just a little bit of time before they know the more noise they make, the quicker they get it plugged. Because that's what they want. They want it now. Don't matter if mama's trying to make that bottle and it ain't warm yet. They want it now. It's a lesson that most of us have to learn the hard way, and a whole big percentage of people just never do learn it. They just don't learn it.
Right.
You learn to cope. You learn to rearrange your circumstances so that things that rot, that bring forth the need for patience in your life are eliminated. You just streamline your life so that it's not required of you no more. And sometimes that works. Now, like I always say, I'm looking in the mirror when I say this because I have been the most impatient person that I've probably ever known. And a lot of it doesn't get vocalized, but you can't have that much of it in you and it not ooze out and people see it, you know, in your language. And then no matter if you try to hide it or whatever, it just comes out because, you know, and it's funny. Tim laughs because it's so funny, because every time I leave the house, every single time.
It's true.
I mean, 99.95% of the time when I leave the house, I will get behind somebody going slow. It doesn't matter. This morning, I told her, I said, she need to go to the store. We need to stop by Dad's. And I said, we need to leave 30 minutes early. Well, that wasn't going to work because, after all, there was too much to get ready. But we did leave 15 minutes early. Now, every Sunday morning, I live 40 miles from here. And every Sunday morning, we leave at 9 o'clock. So we're here before 10. Just, we know we cannot leave no later than 9. And every Sunday morning, by the time I get to Eagle Sky or just a little closer this way, I get behind this old blue Crown Vic.
Oh, brother.
They go 45 miles an hour all the way to First Baptist in front of Town and Country. This morning, we left 15 minutes early. And by the time I got to Barefoot Village, guess who I was behind?
Oh, brother.
That blue Crown Vic going 45 miles an hour all the way to First Baptist in front of Town and Country. I told her, I said, this is not irony. This is beyond that. Because it doesn't matter if I left 2 hours early tomorrow going to town, there'd be that blue Crown Vic and them dear old folks in it going 45 miles an hour. No matter where I go. And she says, it's the Lord trying to teach you patience. And I said, it's not funny and it's not fair. But I was, okay, so Wyatt and Alyssa were going for a couple of days down to Dakota and Esther's. And Kim took Anna and Maddie and went to Greenville for an hour or so. This was Friday? Yeah. And I had a list of things that I needed to get done around the house. And one of them was I needed to put in this new faucet on the kitchen sink. I would rather take a whooping. I mean it. I get a paddle and just whoop me. That kind of whooping. Than I would to do plumbing work. I just hate it so bad. I do. And I've always been the kind of, I don't know, it's like when I have to do something that I just despise, it don't mean you don't have to do it. Just because you don't like it, I mean, being the dad / husband / handyman / all those hats, sometimes you just got to just knuckle under and just do it. But I don't got to be happy about it. And I'm going to let everybody know it. But I don't know. The Lord's been working in my heart about something for a while. And, you know, Wyatt, him and I have had a hard time for the last year or so learning how to work together. Because here, and it's, I described it this way the other day. I thought, if I have my boy and I raise him to work like me, then before long, there'll be two of me. And we'll get twice as much done. Right?
Yeah.
Sadly, that's not true.
It is.
That's not meaning that he's lazy, because he's a hard worker and he's diligent. But he's not me. He does not do things like me. And I've learned it's a lot. The outcome is a whole lot more positive if I just say, here's what I want done. I'll be back after a while. And then he gets it done. Because he's a different person than me. And if I was just real hard-nosed about it, you know what he'd do? He'd endure it for a while until he found somebody else to go work for. And then he's gone. And I don't know. It's just these things I think about. They left. I was home by myself. It's funny because the things, like he watches on YouTube sometimes, this guy, and I do not understand. It's just one of the things that, to me, is like the biggest waste of time of a life I don't understand. But I'm building up to a point, okay? This guy makes videos of doing things that are miniature. Whether it's building a miniature set of dining room table and chairs. And he slowly, like he has a camera that zooms way up close, and it's a silent video of him slowly making all this tiny little furniture and little pies. And I don't know. It's just, my brain don't work that way. It's like, why would you want to make a cherry pie that's as big as a nickel? That's a waste of time right there. I mean, there's way better things to do. I don't know. Go throw rocks at a tree. I don't know anything would be better than that. But what it is that guy that does that, I don't know who he is. I'll pray for him. But he gets fulfillment, some kind of enjoyment from doing things that are tiny like that. Well, mine don't work that way, my hands. But some people, here's my point. He's not getting his fulfillment from that nickel-sized cherry pie. The fulfillment he's getting from it is the doing of it. You know, there's millions and millions of people on the face of this earth, and not two of them are the same in every way. And there are things that bring us, even if it's just, you know, there's people who do things that to me would drive me bonkers, like trying to figure it all out. Like people that put together 5,000-piece puzzles.
That is a waste of
time. I'll do it for a while, but it's like, yeah, I got better things. I'm going to die someday, and this is what I'm going to have used part of my time doing. How ridiculous. However, there's people who have a lot of anxiety and things in life, and they'll go do something like that, and it seems to just like calm them down. When I think about it, when I was going through a pretty stressful time in my life, that's when I started carving. And for me, at the beginning of it was, I tell everybody, it was a way for me to decompress from the stress of what was going on in the rest of my life. I could go and put my earplugs in and just run my saw and nobody talked to me and I could think. And my hands would do something productive while my mind could just kind of sort things out. And just, it was a time of peace. And so, ironically for me, the end result was the fact that I could carve and I didn't know it. And now it's how I make my living. But that's not why I was doing it. I was doing it because the process of doing that action brought me some kind of peace in my mind. It gave me a time of quietness, even if it was with a chainsaw. It was the process, you know. And in this society that we live in, where everything is this microwave now. I mean, if popcorn, you said yesterday, if popcorn takes 2 minutes to make in the microwave, we got to figure out how to make it take 1 minute. Because 2 minutes is too long. You know? And that's the mentality of everybody about everything. You know, I remember sitting on the porch with Grandpa when I was younger and him telling me, look, you know, I've worked a lifetime for the stuff you see that I have. A whole lifetime. And if you go out here and try to get started and have all the same stuff, you're gonna wreck. Because it takes a lifetime to have a nice place and to have a tractor and to have this and to have that and to be where I'm at now. I've worked all my life. You don't know how long I've worked to get to this point. So don't go out there and try to have it all at once. Well, what's our world done? You know? You can't even maintain your chastity for want of, got to have it now. We can't wait. And you throw it all away. For the end result that you think you cannot live without, that you will not live without. I'm going to have whatever I want, whenever I want it, in however amount that I want it, and nobody's going to tell me no. Not even God. And even an old butterfly has to wrap up in a cocoon for a while before he becomes a butterfly. He's got to wait. Does not matter how much he wants to be a butterfly, he's got to wait. You know?
Yep.
There's a lot of verses in the Bible about it coming to pass. 463 times it says, and it came to pass. And it came to pass. And it came to pass. Well, that little phrase right there, we don't know how long that time frame was. We was even talking about it yesterday. That's what road trips are good for. Captive audiences. But y'all have fun in May. But hey, when God created the animals, and then He created Adam, then it said, He said it was good that man, it wasn't good that man was alone. We don't know how long it was between the end of making the animals and Adam, and then when God said, it's not good that he's alone. It might have been 2 days. It might have been a long time. We don't know. But the bottom line is the last thing he created was woman. You know? And we don't know how long Adam had to wait and be lonely. Be alone. But he did. You know? It says there, and it came to pass in the process of time that the king of Egypt died. And the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage. And they cried, and their cry came up unto God by reason of the bondage. How long had they been captive? We know that. 400 years. 400 years. That's a long, it says, the process of time. It came to pass in the process of time. Well, when they all showed up there and the whole culture and everything was different than it was 400 years later. When that Pharaoh who loved Joseph and gave them the land of Goshen for all his family to go be in or whatever, they weren't ready to go take the land that God had promised Abraham. It wasn't time yet. There was a whole bunch of work that was going to have to be done, 400 years worth. Until they got to the point where they started sighing. We don't want to be in bondage no more. And then they turned to him and said, well, please help us. Then he was able, it was time. But not till then. Mm-hmm. He never made not a single attempt, not one, to bring them out of it for 400 years.
Yes.
And we can't wait 4 weeks for our tax return or something's wrong. You know? Or for them to argue over what stimulus we're getting next. Come on, Nancy, get it together. Let's go. It's mine. Let's have it. You know, we have, and here's the deal. We're impatient, and it's a habit that you make. I said all that about that guy making the little cherry pie and all that stuff. I've always been the kind of person where if I've got to do it, I'll do it. But I'm going to gripe every inch of the way. If I don't want to do it, you're going to know that this is my least favorite thing to do. And when I'm done, hallelujah, I'm glad that's over with. Don't ask me to do it again for a while. I hate it. Stupid plumbing. It's everybody else's fault because, like, you know, the doorknob. We go through 2 doorknobs a year on our house. We wear them out. They open lots of times.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how the hinges hold up. I don't know. But poor little Madeline is always the one with her hand on it when it's like, and it won't open. And I'm like, Madeline, I'm sorry, Dad. I didn't do it. And I'm like, but your hand is on it. I know, I'm sorry. So I'll gripe about that. So we got to change the doorknob. The faucet. Everybody kept pulling it out until it finally, you know, it ain't nobody's fault. It clogged up with limescale. That's why it's finally done. But I got to get under there and change this faucet. Well, I was by myself at the house. And like I said, I've been thinking about this for a while. And the, you know, the Lord's just been dealing with me about, you know, what a sorry state for your heart and your mind to be in, to be the way I've been about this matter, you know. You know, if the Lord works in your life to teach you things, you know, and this has been going on for now into 40 years in my life now, maybe I ought to pay attention. Maybe I ought to do something. So I got underneath that sink to put in this water faucet, and it was a fancy one. Got it on clearance. Real good clearance. But it's one of them kind of, it's got a electric valve underneath there with a battery pack, and you don't have to touch the faucet. You can just wave your hand by it and the water comes on. Wave your hand and it turns it off. There's no telling what will be the end of this thing. I'm telling you. Oh, and I had to replace the valve system in the toilet that week too because it died. Yeah, it's been a plumbing kind of week. But anyways, I just determined when I started to do this, I said, you know what? I'm just going to take my time. I'm not going to get frustrated about this. And I'm just going to enjoy the process, if that's possible. I'm just going to try to just do this in a different state of mind, like approach it with a different mindset. Well, guess what? It worked the first time.
Wow.
And I didn't hit my head or my elbows under the sink.
Wow.
I wasn't. And I'm, you know, it ain't like this is some grand revelation, but at the same time, for me, it was just a lesson. That, you know, the way you approach something in acceptance, you know, what do you always say that patience is joy? It's acceptance with joy. That's what patience is. And we all make a joke about asking for patience, but please hurry up with it and them kind of things. But it's endurance with joy. Well, endurance, you don't endure something that's pleasant. Enduring is something you don't want to do. You know, it changes how you're able to enjoy the end result.
Yes.
If you're impatient and angry about the process. Okay. If you just fight it every step of the way. You know, how many times have I had to make more trips to town, plumbing usually, because I didn't measure this right and I cut it wrong, or I didn't count the fittings the right way because I was angry for having to do it in the first place, and then I wind up making 2 or 3 trips. And then my whole attitude about plumbing is that, you know, I'd rather take a whooping than do it because you can't never do it right the first time and blah, 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 and it's just all this negative garbage. You'll be that way about that, about plumbing. But what it is it becomes the habit of your life. Yeah. About everything. You know? Mm-hmm. When I was younger, you know, I spent most of my life being discontent with all the things that I did not have. Because I looked around at all the stuff that I needed. And she used to say, you know, I don't know. I'd say, you know what I wish I had? You know what I wish I had? And that's what I said all the time about things that I didn't have. And it wasn't like, you know, jet skis and new deer rifles. It was, you know, tools for this or that. You know, it was always something that I, in my mind, it was completely justified to be aggravated that I didn't have it. Because my circumstances wouldn't allow it. I couldn't afford it. I couldn't pay for it. I couldn't, it might as well. So I just dwelt in that state all the time. And I don't know, nothing ever good has ever come of it. You know, the Bible says in Philippians chapter 2 and verse 13, for it is God, which worketh in you both to will and to do of His good pleasure. Well, I don't know. When you have kids, it opens your eyes to some things about how the relationship between you and God is in reality.
Yes,
brother. And, you know, there's things that I want for my kids, and if I could just push a button and it would be so, I'd do it.
Yeah.
You know, but it doesn't work that way.
No.
You know, there's people in our life that have made a mess. And if you could just fix it,
yeah,
you would. But you got to understand that God's working a process in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times our good intentions are interfering with His process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we wonder why the outcome never is good. It never works.
Mm-hmm.
And then we blame it on all kinds of other stuff. And really, man, if we could ever just get a hold of this, and I want to do some more thinking and studying on this, maybe we'll talk about it again. But, you know, God has ordained the process. And people want God's favor to be like magic.
Mm-hmm.
Just, if you shall ask anything in my name, I will do it. If you shall say to that mountain, be thou removed and cast into the sea, it'll happen. If you just have faith. Your faith just ain't strong enough, so we got to figure out how to get that. Get some strong faith. Well, maybe God will give me strong faith so I can cast mountains into the sea. He works that in you through a process of time and trial and tribulation and plumbing and digging holes and working on cars. That's another thing I hate to do. It's mechanic work, but I don't know. I would venture to say that if we didn't fight the process so hard on just about anything, that it would be easier to accomplish.
Yeah,
you know, you take, and I keep talking about this little dog, but man, you know, if she will just respond to your training, it just makes things happen so much quicker and easier and smoother. And it just, you know, but here's the thing. We bought one of them invisible fences that's got a radio signal and a shocking collar. And you can have a bag of treats and you can say, drop that sock. And if you'll give her the treat, show her the treat, she'll spit the sock out and you can give her the treat. If you ain't got no treat, it takes a little more persuasion. Well, she'll do it, but boy, she don't really want to. But we put that shock collar on her. And we took her outside. And she run over there, and the thing goes to beeping before it nails her. Beep, 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 beep. Zap, zap, zap. And she put her in high ratu reverse, buddy. And that was it.
One time.
And now when that beep starts to happen, she heads for the house. I mean, she don't want that to happen never again. Why? Because it was unpleasant. It hurt. And, I mean, if we'd have stood out there with a bag of treats, she'd ate every one of them and probably still tried to cross that line. But not after the shock. Well, why? Well, because the process required some pain for her to learn the lesson.
Yeah.
And we really aren't no different.
No.
And the Lord knows that. I mean, He's our Father, right? And He knows that. Now, even that little old dog, I don't want to shock her. I don't get pleasure from shocking that little dog. I like that little dog. And I don't want to hear her yelp and carry on, but I also don't want to be scraping her off 34 down there with a shovel.
Mm-hmm.
So I put a shock collar on her. And she got bit. And even I can adjust the volume of that bite, you know. And it wasn't the strongest it could possibly be. It was gentle, but it was enough to get her attention. She don't want no more of it. So she complied. And guess what? You know, an old dog don't have no concept of yesterday or tomorrow or eternity. They live for today. They live for right now. The way most people do, really, sadly. Just, I want to be happy now. Whatever makes me happy now. And if you can take an old dog and train them to behave, not dig holes and chew up shoes and not go running around in the highway, and they just live for right in this moment, then what's our excuse? I mean, the Lord, how much more patient and long-suffering is He with us?
Oh, wow.
About how high He turns up that shock collar, you know, and bear with us for decades, trying to teach us a lesson about just slow down. You know, how many times have you been behind a person going slow and you're just like, oh, so I'm going to pass them. Zoom, and around you go. And 10 miles down the road, you pull up to a stoplight. And guess who pulls up beside you? That person that you could not burn, you just had to get around.
Exactly.
And you let yourself literally have a spirit of, I don't know what you, what would that spirit be? This anger or frustration or impatience or disdain for somebody. I mean, just all but curse them for going 10 miles under the speed limit. Doggone their hide. Going to take their driver's license away from them out here impeding traffic. And then they'll pull up beside you. And like you've said before, then you get out at the store and you're like, here, let me get that door for you. How you doing today? And everybody, you know, you're in your car and you're angry, but then you won't be mad at them at the, you'll be nice to them. Lord, have mercy. And it didn't gain you nothing. It just frustrated your spirit and your soul to let yourself go to that place.
Yes, sir.
And I've done it. Lord, have mercy. I've got scars on my hands because of it. Just being so mad at a piece of wood that wouldn't cooperate, or you know, a stupid car that won't get fixed. And I've done spent $1,000 on sensors for this. I'm gonna pour gas in it, throw a road flare in it, and we're gonna sit back and drink a glass of tea and watch this sucker burn into the front yard. Really? My goodness. How futile.
Yes.
And how un-Christ-like.
Yes.
So wrong. Mm-hmm. And I sit and think about, you know, that little dog. One of these days, I'm going to preach a message, things I've learned from my dog. And I'm telling you, it's somewhat profound. And it ain't about the dog. It's about me. You know? When a dog... You train it to do stuff and it relapses and falls off the wagon, so to speak, and misbehaves. You know what you do? You don't get something beat on it because the dog's done forgot what it was that he did, for the most part. You just go back to the beginning and start over and start training again. You know?
To the Lord.
You need to go back, start over again. And if they make a mistake, you know, you might get 5 feet further this time, but if they do it again, all right, back to the beginning. And the patience it takes, and the long suffering that it takes. I told her, I said, if I'd have learned this lesson with our kids when they were little, I wouldn't feel so guilty about their childhood.
Yes.
Thank the Lord they don't remember very some of it.
Yep.
But I do.
Yes.
I feel this big sometimes for the impatience I have with my children for this in this matter.
Right.
But I'll do it with a dog. I'll be patient with a dog. Shame on me. The fulfillment isn't... all of the joy that comes from... I want you to think about this. We know that heaven and eternity with the Lord is the Christian's reward. We know that. It's eternity with Him. But is that why you're a Christian? Just for what's at the end? Is that why the Lord... told you to spend and be spent for Him here?
Oh, my.
So you could earn your place? Well, we all know we don't earn our place in heaven, right? I mean, this whole day today is all about why we can't do that. But we live our life for us and Him. So that we got our own thing going, and when we get there, we've got our spot because we've been good. When in reality, the whole process of getting there is what the Christian life is. You know, being born again, He said, you'll be with me in the end. Eternity, you're with me. But in the meantime, this life is now for you to live the process. And all of our fulfillment as a Christian happens here in the process. And it affects all those around us and our posterity. It doesn't earn us a single inch of heaven. But it affects His eternity. His eternity. Her eternity. What I do. And it's profound. To think about that if I'm okay, it's just like having a baby. You know, and the 9 months of pregnancy and the throwing up and the backaches and the numbness in your limbs and all of the horrible things that you have to endure as an expectant mother. And if you fight it, they'll even tell you this in a secular Lamaze class. When it comes time for labor, don't fight it. That's what all that breathing's for. To help you not fight it. Because it'll happen a lot faster and easier for you if you don't fight it. But when you've hated every minute of it, and I just want this thing out of me. But then your child's born and you love your child. But you hated the process that got him here. Man, think about that. You know, I know it's not pleasant. Lord have mercy. It's part of the curse. Sincerely. But there's something in it for you. If you'll embrace it, the Lord will give you grace. He might even give you some relief.
Yes, I believe that.
I believe that. And all of us have something or a bunch of stuff in our life that is hard to endure. You know, neighbors, co-workers, family, circumstances, finances, a car or two or three that's just, you just got to endure it. I don't know what else to do with it. But, you know, we think that all good things come from the Lord, so all these other things must come straight from the devil just to try to trip us up. I don't know. You think that worm likes being wrapped up in that ball of stuff for all them days that he's in there? It's the process.
Come on in.
Come on in.
It's getting done here.
So, that's what I had. We'll talk about it maybe some more later on.